The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Oh, that fourth cup of coffee this morning here on Saturday. We're in the second of 3 hours. At 9 o'clock, I will be replaced by, who's doing it today, Javi? I don't think, is it Matt Dunn? Matt Dunn, who I falsely identified as Jason Dunn, our former U.S. attorney last week. Matt Dunn in the studio for Randy Liberty Esquire Corcoran. Can't wait to hear what he's going to talk about today. Guy just knows stuff different than I know it. And frankly, different than most people. He just looks into things at a deeper level. And I'm kind of hopeful he talks about this Arizona thing. There may be some things I'm just missing about this. I give you the 30,000-foot conclusion, but there's probably some stuff in there that he knows about he'd want to talk about. Now, here's the deal. By the way, George Brockler on the George Show, 710 KNUS. I write a column for the Denver Post. They let me submit one every other week. I'd love to do it more often. It is a bit time-consuming. Like doing it. Thrilled that Megan Schrader lets me do it. This one, I hope, is making it into Sunday's paper. Here's the deal. They give you a limited number of words. And as an attorney, I always go over them, always. And sometimes it's easy for Megan to cut it down. Sometimes it's like, sweet mother of goodness, what have you sent me? That is true of this one right here. So I usually get about 700, 750 words to play with. That's most columnists in the paper. I submitted something to her that may have been in the range of 1,300 or more. And so that created a huge problem. So I don't know how much of this makes it into the Post tomorrow. Had I sent it to her earlier, maybe it could have been better positioned and all that. But she's got to figure out a way to fit stuff in, like making puzzle pieces as we go. But this is what it's about. You'll remember that the Attorney General released a report, not last week, but the week before that, calling the Aurora Police Department really racists in the way that they do their job. And if you'd read the report, and please don't, it's like over 100 pages. I did. The gist of the whole thing, I'll sum for you in this thing, but it is troubling to me, given how critical these issues are that we're discussing, that the report was generated in the way that it was. A lot of economics, gobbledygook speak, a whole bunch of charts and graphs, but at the end of the day, the investigation of this, the statistical investigation coupled with, anyway, I'll talk to you about it here. I'm going to read you, this is the like director's version of this, the director's edition of the column. Much of this may not appear in the Post. I don't know, but here's how it's going to be, and you share it if you like it. 2 days before his well-orchestrated launch for re-election, Attorney General Phil Weiser grabbed national headlines with his well-orchestrated announcement that the men and women of the Aurora Police Department, Colorado's second largest, violated countless state and federal laws and to be racists in the performance of their duties. There are few issues as important to our community as addressing the role that race plays in every aspect of our society, especially in the areas of public safety and the administration of justice. However, the claimed 14-month AG investigation resulted in a 118-page report based on logical fallacies, missing and unreliable information, and observations of, quote, statistically significant racial disparities, end quote, that are less than those observed in Denver, Boulder, and nearly everywhere else. Aurora PD has well-documented issues and has taken numerous steps in the past 18 months to better address them. There's much more to do, and law enforcement in general deserves greater transparency and scrutiny from those it serves us. But this report is a politically motivated conclusion looking for a data-related justification. The treatment of the intersection of race and law enforcement in our community deserves much more. Spoiler alert below for those who might have one day read the data analysis of this report. Despite the AG-picked experts' review of trillions or more reports and other data, the gist of their opinion is this. APD is racist in the performance of their duties because they contact and arrest a higher percentage of blacks than reside in Aurora. That synopsis just saved you 3 hours and several Advil. The AG argues that if blacks make up 16.5% of Aurora's population, police contacts, arrests, and everything else should mirror that. Such rationale ignores crime trends, individual will, data since the dawn of data, and common sense. The natural conclusion of the AG's logic is either blacks are being arrested for crimes they did not commit, or whites are not being arrested for the crimes they did commit. If the AG's thesis is true, his next patterns and practices targets must be the agencies in his home of Denver and Governor Polis' home of Boulder. Looking at 2019 to 2021 uniform crime report data for Denver, and using the language and logic of the AG's report, the relative proportion of Denver police citations, summonses, and arrests involving black subjects was more than three times higher than would be anticipated based on the relative percentage of black individuals in Denver's population alone. That, my friends, is a higher percentage than Aurora PD. The statistics are dramatically worse in Polis Boulder. Using 2019 data, the relative proportion of Boulder police and sheriff citations, summonses, and arrests involving black subjects was approximately 600% higher than would be anticipated based on the relative percentage of black individuals in Boulder's population alone. That's more than double the, quote, statistically significant findings that earned APD the bloodlust of the AG and his accusations. Is Boulder law enforcement racist? The AG may want to explore the racist patterns and practices of murderers and other violent criminals as well. In Denver, despite representing 10% of the population, blacks make up 41% of murder victims and 20% of victims of violent crime. In Aurora, blacks comprise 43% of murder victims and 30% of violent crime victims, despite making up 16.5% of the population. Does the AG believe that racism explains the overrepresentation of blacks in murder statistics? The report cuts corners to maintain its predetermined conclusion. Rather than using the zip code or neighborhood of the person contacted by APD, the AG uses the zip code where the contact occurred as an explanation for why geography is irrelevant to the analysis, as if to suggest that all police contacts occur in a home zip code. Rather than analyze use of force data by comparing contacts involving crimes against people versus crimes against property, the AG uses the unhelpful classification of misdemeanors versus felonies. Misdemeanor assault crimes carry far more risk to responding officers than many felony property crimes. Other important areas of data were simply ignored. Before alleging that APD engaged in numerous unconstitutional stops and arrests, the AG appears to have made no effort to get available data from the courts about how many cases involve suppression of evidence or case dismissals due to unconstitutional conduct by police. And there's a spoiler alert if you go to look for that aside from this column. There ain't many. Couple, handful at best over the years. The AG says that to address his allegation that areas with higher black populations are, quote, over-policed, the AG appears to have made no effort to get 911 or call for service data by neighborhood or zip code, and instead treats every documented contact as if it was discretionary and initiated by APD. The AG's handpicked data and resulting conclusions are problematic when applied elsewhere. The data analytics team for this report was comprised of 83% men and only 17% women, despite the fact that women make up nearly 50% of the population. Is that sexist? One of the touted report experts is the former chief of police for Arlington, Texas. According to their own June 2019 data, 37% of Arlington PD stops were made of blacks, despite the fact that they represent less than 22% of the population. 57% of all arrests of motor vehicle theft were blacks in Arlington. Patterns and practices, anyone? Is Arlington PD racist? If so, why did the AG use their chief of police for this report? In addition to data, the AG considered the opinions of community activists and criminal defense attorneys. Huh? The only group yet to be interviewed for their consideration by the AG are those arrested, convicted, and serving prison sentences for violent felonies. Were prosecutors interviewed? Were officers who used lawful force to save their own lives or other lives interviewed? Were victims whose lives were saved by the forceful intervention of APD considered? What's worse, the authors of the report claim to have participated in 190 hours of ride-alongs with APD, during which time they observed, or so they claimed, unconstitutional uses of force by officers against people, quote, who had not committed a crime and presented no danger, end quote. If true, This appears to be criminal behavior. It is of great concern, then, that in the spirit of the much-vaunted police reform bill, SB 2217, these representatives of the AG's office, a law enforcement organization, appear to have done nothing. No intervention. No immediate referral for investigation. No detailing of what violation of civil rights laws are criminal or criminal code. Just indefensible accusations justifying their conclusion that APD uses excessive force. Where are those formal accusations and investigations? Weiser now demands APD yield to a consent decree under the threat of litigation and allow him to oversee their agency. However, the use of the percentage of population logical fallacy for measuring racist conduct by a law enforcement agency will make our community less safe. This politically driven metric encourages any agency desiring to avoid or to get out from under Phil's thumb to make their arrests, contacts, and use of force mirror population numbers, not crime. Law enforcement officers will think twice about responding to calls to certain areas out of fear that it will skew the AG's chosen metrics. Or will there be moments when APD charges someone with a crime for which they might otherwise have given a warning because they need to maintain a certain percentage for that race or ethnicity? None of the AG's approach here will make Aurora safer, fairer, or more just. Arming the most political AG in our state's history with patterns and practices powers is more than telling a hammer to go find nails. And sure enough, the hammer found its nail in APD. The legislature has given Mjolnir Thor's hammer to a rampaging, academically experienced green monster. Phil Smash! The AG, who has expanded the staff of his office at a historic pace, is now advertising for even more employees to help him take over the management of, based on the dubious logic in this report, every law enforcement agency that falls within his crosshairs. In this period of surging crime everywhere, Coloradans should be gravely concerned about what our attorney general is doing. In this period of sincere and needed reflection on race in law enforcement and our community, we deserve more than a report designed to score predictable political points. Coloradans deserve an unbiased and thorough assessment of the practices of Aurora PD and other agencies. This was not it. That reading I will also do later on in the show in French. No, I'm kidding, I won't. That is my column that I submitted. I can't tell you how many of the words will be jettisoned from that. I cut out some things that were far more, I'm going to say gratuitous, about the current AG's experience level when it comes to criminal justice. And I feel like just out of a sense of candor and a little bit of guilt for having lost the race, I need to tell you, if you don't know, I lost to Phil Weiser in running for attorney general. And it seems like I have to say that because everyone else that hears this would be like, yeah, well, that's just sour grapes. Not a thing in there is sour grapes. It's all called data and logic, but you can go through it tomorrow. But one of the things that I cut out of the piece was a discussion of the fact that here's a guy who campaigned against me on the idea that my experience in criminal justice was super neat, but largely irrelevant to the job of the attorney general. And yet the things he's doing right now, the big national attention grabbing things that he uses as his springboard to announce his run for reelection, are all criminal justice related. My God, the guy wants to take over the running of the Aurora Police Department. Dude needs to be shown which table to sit at in a courtroom because he ain't never been in one as a representative of the people of the state of Colorado. That doesn't mean he's a bad person. Doesn't mean he's not a bright person. But I'll be honest with you, I'm not going to hire a medical student who's never made a cut on a patient to operate on someone I love. That's just not going to happen. A professor of medicine who's never done an operation, not going to have him operate on someone I love. And yet here's the state I love being operated on by a guy who's been in the ivory tower up until recently and now wants to take over Aurora PD. And I want to be clear about this, too. I'm not defending Aurora PD. There have been huge mistakes, some of which I have been responsible for looking into, some mistakes that are certainly more than problematic. They're wrong based on some rules, maybe some internal regulations, maybe even civilly, but don't rise to the level of successful criminal prosecution. So don't hear me to be out there saying that APD is flawless and this whole thing is just screwed up. This thing is screwed up in different ways. Like, we deserved to know what the real issues were. We didn't get that. We got this 30,000-foot view looking at statistics, and that, my God, they spent on page, I think it was like 55, a paragraph or two defending why it was okay for them to use percentage of population as a measure of whether or not this police department had engaged in racist conduct. That's ridiculous. They dismissed the idea that it had something to do with demographics in terms of like socioeconomic stuff because they said, well, we looked at the zip code where the incident or the action occurred. Like, oh, that's right, because all crime is right where someone lives. That's not true. In fact, I remember when I was DA, I asked a super smart prosecutor in our office who's data-driven to come up with a heat map for property crimes in our jurisdiction and then ultimately all crimes in our jurisdiction. And would you believe it? A huge number of people that are committing crimes in Douglas County don't live in Douglas County. How did that happen? It's interesting. It's almost like criminals leave their homes to go do bad things. Isn't that weird? Sometimes normal people leave their homes to go do things that end up being bad because they get liquored up or they get drugged or they make some bad decisions. But this, I'm interested in how much of this was volunteered expert time and how much money we spent on this, because this is something that high school economic students could see doesn't match up with the stated goal, which was to try to find out if there were quote unquote patterns and practices. All this shows is some sort of statistical correlation. And oh, by the way, a statistical correlation that's even worse for Boulder. For Boulder. And Denver. I mean, I didn't look at any other jurisdictions or any other law enforcement agencies, but are there any agencies that could withstand this math, this metric? And if that's the case, man, AG's office is going to have to triple in size. And I think Phil would love that because he wants to take over the running of all the places he's never been, police departments and courts and stuff like that. Anyway, frustrating because I think Aurora deserves to know the truth about what's going on, because until they know the truth about what's going on, they cannot fix what's going on. Instead, you'll now have APD saying, well, how do we get to 16.5% of our arrests, uses of force, and all that stuff, because that's the population that we have in Aurora. That's not fair to anyone, certainly not fair to victims. That's not fair to the community either. Hopefully we'll get some better answers in the future. If they ever try to do something like this again, my God, I hope they actually give it the real college try. Listen, when we come back, we're going to shift gears entirely. We're going to talk with Christy Burton Brown. You know her as the chair of the state GOP party. Big to-do last Saturday down in Pueblo. We talked about it a bunch here. Randy Liberty Esquire and I disagreed on the opt-out thing. If you hadn't paid attention because, one, it's just so freaking boring you can't bring yourself to care, or you don't think it's relevant, you're going to get to know the result. I'm not going to give it to you now. We'll get to know the result after the break when we talk to KBB, and she's going to talk to us about next steps on that. And then I hadn't told her I was going to ask her this, but maybe I'll just spring it on her when she gets there. But we'll talk a little bit about election stuff for the future and maybe just a touch about stuff in the past. But until that time, you're listening to George Brockler on The George Show. It's 710 KNUS. Hard to tell if this was handpicked by Javier behind the glass. George Brockler back with you on the George Show, 710 KNUS, just about halfway through the show at this point, because it's Sister Sledge. And who do we have on the line with us right now but a superstar for the state of Colorado right now, the chair of the GOP party, Christy Burton Brown. Thank you, KBB, for joining us this morning.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, now listen, listeners should know that I offered you the opportunity to come on later, thinking maybe the weekend was a place for you to sleep in. You wanted to go as early as possible. That's crazy. But thank you for doing that. You must be a mom.
Yes, this is true.
Hey, I wanted to ask you to bring people up to speed. And I know for us, it was a pretty consuming event. And that was down in Pueblo last Saturday. We were making some big decisions that were going to have ripple effects across the state in terms of how we conducted our primary and the assemblies and all that. But there are folks out there who just didn't pay attention, don't know the answer to what happened. Can you set the stage for last Saturday and the opt-out vote?
Yes, absolutely. So we're required by our bylaws every 2 years to take a vote on whether or not the Republican Party is going to stay in the open primary system that we have here in Colorado, where every Republican gets a ballot, unaffiliated can choose which primary to vote in, or we can choose to what's called opt out, which would mean Republicans would eliminate their participation in the primary system, and roughly 4,000 delegates at the state level would pick our candidate to advance to the general election in the statewide races. So that's the choice. There's a lot of pretty hard campaigning on both sides.
Lots.
For sure. Yeah, you know this. You know this. And in the end, when we took the vote, 33.7%, so just under 34%, voted to opt out. So way under what was required to opt out, not a majority at all. So Republicans are going to stay in the primary and be able to really reach out, I think, to certainly all Republicans across the state, but also welcome unaffiliated voters to be a I think we'd ask them to go a step farther, be a part of our party,
right,
and see why our candidates are the right solutions.
Now, one of the things that was working in the background of this, and maybe it was a chronological step that was, and maybe it still will take place after this, was the idea that the provision in the Constitution that allows us to opt out sets a pretty high bar. And for some,
it
and
does.
I think there's a huge number, like almost unattainable, and that is 75% would have to vote to opt out. That's like a super duper majority.
Yeah.
And as I looked at this, I thought to myself, well, look, the fallback plan for those that want to opt out is, look, let's get over 50%. Let's even try to get 2/3, a supermajority, and prove that this thing is unconstitutional because it's really an opt-out provision that doesn't exist. It's just fake. But the numbers that they came back with were so low. I mean, that's like a superminority, 1/3 versus 2/3. What was there any discussion or decision made despite that, about moving forward, challenging the constitutionality of this opt-out provision?
Yeah, so people did actually discuss that. We had a resolution brought forward by some people who were there who do believe that the 75% requirement is unconstitutional. Incidentally, like, I agree, the state really has no business telling a private organization what
right.
constitutes a majority of our own vote. 75% of
yep.
the entire membership is a really, really practically impossible bar. But they also, you know, they just wanted to challenge the law as unconstitutional. Now, that did pass. That is what the majority would like. I think, you know, we'll have to really look at what does it say that only 33% roughly of our membership wanted to opt out, though, you know, matching up their desire for a lawsuit and this being unconstitutional with the reality of how people voted. I think there's some things that need to be evaluated. But basically, people really want Republicans to jump in, to get involved, Republicans to pick our candidates and make sure that we're really educated about the choices we're making in candidates.
Yeah, I have long said that I would prefer a system that had just the people that want to wear our jersey picking the team captain. I believe that. But that's
exactly.
just not what we have in Colorado. And so if the alternative
no.
to having all Republicans plus, you know, self-selected unaffiliateds vote is to cut off 99.6% of all of the Republicans, I'll take a pass. I'm going to go with the existing law.
Right, and that's what the majority, you know, wanted. And I had taken the position as the chairman. I mean, sure, we all have our own personal opinions, but the chairman should take a vote like that in a fair and accurate way, give both sides their say, which is what I did the whole time. And, you know, let the people decide. I mean, that's how we operate as Republicans. Make your best case if you're on a certain side and then let the people make their choice. So that's what we did. I think it's a very conclusive decision. And now we're going to be able to move forward and really focus on our candidates and those better solutions for Colorado's future that they're going to be offering to all voters across the state.
I agree with you. I think, though, too, that to some extent, the outcome of the 2022 midterms is either going to put this thing to bed for a couple more cycles, or it's going to breathe new life back into it. Like if somehow Republicans get wiped out everywhere in what is presumed to be at this point something that's going to be very favorable, an environment favorable for Republicans,
mm-hmm.
Right. I think then maybe we see this thing come back and people are like, see what happens? And we got it. And maybe we have this debate again. But if we do as well at the ballot box as I think some are hoping, and as hard as you guys are working on it, I think maybe we don't have to revisit this every 2 years.
Right. And see, I would agree with that because I think it kind of comes down to Republicans have lost a couple of the most, you know, important elections over the last few cycles here in Colorado. So I think the people really campaigning for the opt out, they're looking for a solution. They're saying, how do we win again as Republicans? And I think they tried their best to come up with an answer. And you're right that the 2022 election will determine, is that really the answer?
Right.
Or is it the fact that Republicans have a lot of other work to do in this state that we're doing this cycle? And if it gets done, we'll prove there's other ways to win here in Colorado.
Have you had a chance to assess after the dust has settled on this whether or not that fissure, that crack that was appearing between the opt-outs and the not opt-outs, whether that's going to turn into something mm-hmm. more? And believe me, in the aftermath of a loss, nobody is looking to go sit down and have a beer with the other side right away. I get that. But what's your sense of it, having been in the room and you heard the debates, you saw the vote taken? Is this something that is going to haunt us through the next couple years, or at least through the next election cycle? Or is this something where it's like, okay, I got it. Let's all just focus now on trying to get victory.
Yeah, you know, George, I don't think so. And I am an eternal optimist. Anyone who knows uh-huh. me knows this is true. But I really think we designed the meeting in a way where literally everyone, I mean, like when I say everyone, I mean both sides, and there were multiple contentious issues, got to have their say. And we did it in a way that a lot of people commented afterwards, hey, we expected this to be kind of a brawl, and it was not at all. It was a very peaceful event, lively. People had their say. But I think, and I've checked in with people who were on the side that did not succeed, and they said, you know, we do feel like we had our say. We feel like we had a fair shot at getting this through, and it just didn't get through. It's not what people wanted. And the fact that people supported the idea that this law is unconstitutional, the lawsuit resolution, you know, that made them also feel like they were heard, and there was some agreement that the state doesn't have the state shouldn't be the one inserting themselves in telling us what a majority is, but it's also on us if we can't achieve a majority. So I think, you know, there's a lot of things popping around the state that people are excited about, be that candidates, be that some of the work on election integrity, the great messaging work that's going on our side that the Senate and House is a part of, and a lot of our candidates are a part of. I mean, there's just so much to do. This is over. Let's move on to something else. And I think people are on board with that.
I think that's great. We're a little more than 13 months away, by the way, from finding out how this midterm cycle is going to affect the state of Colorado. And to that regard, I want to ask, have you had a chance to take a look at the last map that was drawn for congressional districts in Colorado? And I think we're still waiting on a map for the legislative side of things. But have you looked at those, and do you have a reaction to those?
Yeah, actually, I have looked at them. And yeah, you're right. There's still one more draft to come out on the legislative side. I think second staff draft on that one came out the same day the final staff draft on congressional came out. You think of the state legislative. I mean, we all know there's another map coming out, and there is more work that should be done. I think they did a good job drawing some competitive seats in the state Senate. The state House should definitely see more competitiveness around the state. That's a constitutional criteria of these maps. They should be competitive. A state like Colorado, that's really representative of our population. Looking at the congressional maps, I'd say one of the best things that the staff did in this draft, you know, they went back to actually separating Moffitt County and Boulder County, because I don't know whose idea it was to draw a coal-producing county in with Boulder County that really, really dislikes energy production.
Kissing cousins.
But that was absolutely just kind of crazy. So that got eliminated. I think that's smart. The Western Slope is largely whole. Rural areas have a better voice than they did in some previous maps. And, you know, I think CD8, the new congressional district, is appropriately competitive, and there's a big Hispanic influence in that district that I think is really important and representative of Colorado, and something Republicans can absolutely tap into and reach that community because our values align.
Now, I have not compared this latest congressional map to the one drawn before, and as folks know out there, there is no constitutional requirement that you live in the congressional district that you represent, and one of the criteria that could not be considered by the staff and by the commission was drawing incumbents into their own districts. Do you know at this point who, if anyone, has been drawn outside of their district? And I know that in the first draft that came out, like Ed Perlmutter was drawn out of his. In another later version, Ken Buck and Lauren Boebert were drawn out of theirs. Do you know where we're at today with those?
Yeah, so I know that Lauren is back in her district because they did keep the Western Slope mostly whole.
Great.
I believe that Ken is back in his district as well. He was right on the edge, kind of like what happened to Perlmutter in the beginning. Ken was right on the edge, and now I believe he's back in CD4. I have not checked Perlmutter because, to be honest with you, I don't know exactly where he lives.
Yeah, he's up north,
so
too.
I haven't checked him.
Do you have a sense of how competitive you view seats 7 and 8? I mean, it feels to me like, and again, we're going to field candidates who are going to charge up that hill regardless how steep it is. I get that, right?
Exactly.
But if you're looking at Denver's District 1, Boulder's District 2, and even Jason Crow's District 6, those are much less competitive than 7 and 8. How do you view 7 and 8 in terms of the GOP's ability to take those?
Yeah, I mean, and really, George, you're right. 7 and 8 are really the only seats that are truly competitive in this map. And, you know, I suppose that's representative of Colorado, three fairly safe Republican seats, three fairly safe Democrat seats, and then 7 and 8, which are both competitive. 8 is certainly drawn to be more competitive when you look at the numbers. 7 is a definite lean Democrat seat. I think, you know, there's always, those are suburbs we used to win, though, too. And I think that's a really interesting conversation Republicans have to have and have been having and will continue to have. How do we win back the suburbs in Jeffco, in Arapahoe County, in Adams County that used to be with us because we talked about their everyday issues of like education and safety and affordability here in Colorado. But then the Democrats kind of acted like they were the party that cared about that and now have failed our state. So can we take those suburbs back? I think those two districts will largely hinge on who can win the suburbs.
Earlier on in the show, the 6 o'clock hour, you'd probably already been up several hours. We discussed this report that came out from Cyber Ninjas in Arizona about the audit that they did of Maricopa County. And ultimately, they found that there are some really concerning things that I think the Secretary of State's office and the clerk and the recorder down there need to address. But overall, they found that, look, we think that Biden won this thing. I bring that up in the context of the question asked of Heidi Ginnall, who's a candidate for governor, by Marshall Zelliger on the day she launched her campaign. You may have seen this, where the first question was the 2020 election stolen? So I don't, you know, if you want to comment on Arizona, great. But my broader question is this. This is going to be something that the mainstream media tries to commit every single GOP candidate to, and they'd love for the discussion to be about 2020, not about 2022.
Yep.
How does the party address that? How does the party tackle that moving forward?
Yeah, you are so right, George. What the Democrats and the media think they can do is tie us to the past and say, well, hey, if we can get Republicans to dwell on the past, they're going to lose because they lost in the past. And they are very much afraid that the future in Colorado belongs to the Republicans, and they don't want to let that happen. So I think what we have to do is we can't ignore the past. We can't, you know, pretend we don't have answers to it. I'm not talking about anyone when I say that. I'm saying Republicans in general. We have to acknowledge, yes, Joe Biden is in the White House, and there's not a provision in U.S. law to do anything about that other than accept the fact Joe Biden is in the White House. He is devastating and destroying our country. What are we going to do to get back a majority in Congress and the Senate and here in our state in 2022? So we have to acknowledge the facts. Yes, Joe Biden is the president of the United States. Democrats control our nation. Democrats control our state. People in Colorado are seeking balance in government because we've fallen on every measurable level here in Colorado. We're talking about jobs, education, affordability. We are deeply in the hole here in Colorado, and we have to be the party that focuses on better solutions for the future. And we can't let the media, the Democrats, corner us into explaining away the past. We have to say, you know what? We're acknowledging the facts, and we're going to paint you a vision for the future and how we help working class, average Coloradoans like us actually succeed in this state. And that comes first with restoring balance to our government, electing some Republicans to change these numbers.
Now, you had been part of a successful effort out there on the Western Slope to help Lauren Boebert win that congressional seat. That's huge. And I think a lot of folks in the party look at her as an example and as a source of what you said is optimism, too. Like, well, maybe there is a way that regular, everyday, hardworking Republicans can simply decide, this is the day I decide to put myself in a position to make a difference for my locale, my state, my country. As you travel the state, and I know you've been going all over the place, do you see potential other Lauren Boeberts? And they don't have to be, you know, butt-kicking, business-owning moms of four boys, but that's a great story, by the way. But do you see that out there? Do you get a sense that that election has helped motivate others to get involved who might otherwise not have been?
100%. And I think we do always see that when an average person steps up and takes responsibility for what's going on and says, I can be the solution to these problems. And they put themselves out there, it inspires other people to do it too. And that is one of the reasons, one of the many reasons I love Lauren. I think she's done a great job of inspiring other people across the state. And what I think is particularly good about it, George, is that we're looking for different kinds of Republicans to represent their districts. The kind of people that represent the Western Slope it's different than the kind of people who represent Colorado Springs or Jefferson County or, you know, take anywhere in the state that you want to talk about. And I think the other part, too, is that people are getting inspired to step up at the local levels as well. It's not all about running for Congress and U.S. Senate. Extremely important. But so are our school boards. So are our city council races. And that is what average people, which, again, is all of us, are being inspired to do, is step up at those local levels, too, and say, you know what? I never have known who's been on my school board before. But I actually now think that it matters, and I'm going to run for it. Or at this point, if someone's name isn't in the race, you got to go find the good candidate who is running and go walk for them every Saturday from now until Election Day, or, hey, at least pick one Saturday, and go get their names out there so that we flip these boards with people on them who actually care about the kids and give parents real choices.
Yeah, it's true what you say. And as someone, and you're familiar with Advance Colorado, as someone who's an active participant in that organization, I can tell you the number of people who come to us and say, I'm thinking about getting involved at the school board level, at the town council level, at the commissioner, whatever, these races that we sort of look past as we look at the headline grabbing ones. These are people who are just everyday Joes and Janes, who are just all of a sudden like, I can't believe my school board did this. I can't believe my city did this. I want to do something. And it's really inspiring to hear these people come forward. It's not exactly what you would expect for us having people like this to run for office, but I'm thrilled for the future.
Oh, I am too, because this is partly how we build the bench. And you know this, George, but we do lack for somewhat of a bench on the Republican side here in Colorado. And it's partly, in my view, because we've neglected to focus on the local levels for too many years. We've been all about the bigger races, and, you know, even the state legislature, it's kind of a big race as well.
Yep, that's
right.
But
we've got to go more local, and that's where we find the people for those bigger races in the future.
I agree. Thank you for your time this morning, KBB. Fantastic job you're doing so far. Looking forward to seeing what we, by the way, do with the school board elections. The ballots are going out in like 15 seconds or something like that, and we will know here in early November if we've made a dent on some of these school boards.
Thank you, George. Appreciate your good work.
Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Talk to you soon. That was Christy Burton Brown, superstar chair of the Colorado State GOP. Man, she just talks in paragraphs, which I love. As someone who has spent a lifetime and a career in the communication game, she's great at it and answers the question, doesn't dodge it. I really, really appreciate that. Look, when we come back, we had mentioned, and by we, I mean Christy Burton Brown, had mentioned our guy, President Joe Biden in the White House, and sort of some of the stuff that he's done, good and bad. I wanted to update you on some things going on with Afghanistan in light of its cratering after we made the decision to pull out in the manner in which we did. It's all good news if you're a member of the Taliban. When we come back, George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. Pretty sure this was in the classic 1980 movie Caddyshack with Rodney Dangerfield. As many of you know, the best golf movie ever made. The worst golf movie ever made, Javi? Yeah, Caddyshack 2 was the answer to my question. And again, that's generational, Javi. Happy Gilmore is a very, very strong contender for best golf movie. And by strong contender, I mean second place, because Caddyshack is it. Now listen, I need to tell you something every hour, as it turns out. 710's Cigar Night with a fella named Dennis Prager. You know Dennis. Everybody on the planet knows Dennis. It's this Thursday night. In person, by the way. This isn't Zoom cigars. This is in-person, socially distanced, secondhand smoke cigars. September 30th, under the stars at the View House in Centennial. Great location in Arapahoe County. Join Dennis Prager and Stephen Tubbs. If you've never heard of Stephen, you've never listened to this radio station, because he is the afternoon drive time guy Monday through Friday. As you know, 4 to midnight or something. It's more like 7, but I mean, nobody can stay on through his whole shift. I'm not even sure he really stays on. I think it's AI after like 6, just artificial intelligence playing its hand up there. Anyway, enjoy a great cigar with them. There are a limited number of tickets available. If you've got the urge to splurge, then join us for this exclusive private event for 710 KNUS listeners. Go to 710knus.com for mostly complete details. No, it's complete details. And I don't know why they say complete details. Like, if you just said details, people would be like, what if I only get some of the details? Where can I go to get the rest of them? Why don't they ever list complete details? Anyway, and I'm not dissing the person at KNUS who drafts this, because it's probably Kelly. And of course, Kelly's my boss. Anyway, Here's what I wanted to say. We talked with KBB in the last segment, did a fantastic job as always. She had referenced some of the problems, and she, those are my terms, hers were a little stronger, about President Biden. I wanted to let you know an update here based on an article I read this morning about Afghanistan, and it's an article, you can Google this thing, called Back to the Dark Ages, Taliban's One-Eyed, One-Legged Enforcer Warns Executions and Amputations Will Return. And if you read through this thing, there is a glimmer of hope and modernization in this approach that the Taliban say. And as you know, it's the new and improved. It's the kinder, gentler Taliban. And one of the things that they've agreed to do is allow people to have cell phones. And that's important, right? I mean, it's a big deal. It's a new century, I guess, for them. Maybe a new millennia for them. I don't really know. But they're definitely going to allow people to have cell phones and some other modern technology. But at the same time, they're going to continue to cut off hands. And that's not just me saying it. That is this guy from the Taliban saying it. We're going to continue to cut off hands and murder people and put people to death. The debate for them right now is, do we do it in public? Do we do it like we did before when we put them in a stadium in 2016? Or do we allow people to use the new technology we're allowing them to have to video record the amputations and the death penalty stuff so that we can get the message out that way? They have really signed off on this idea that media is the way to get their message out to millions of more future recruits. So, you know, the Taliban's turned the corner here. They're kinder, gentler. We can trust them. That's why we should give them the list of all of the American-friendly Afghanis that, no, we shouldn't have done. I get what you're saying. But this is a direct result of the haphazard and amateur wayish in which we withdrew from Afghanistan to allow this to happen so quickly. And as you recall, there's no chance the Taliban is going to move in and quickly take over the country. I'm just repeating the words of our president here. But that's what takes place. And here's what they've said. We've changed from the past. This guy's name is Tarabi. He's dismissed the criticism and stated that the same forms of punishment will return. This is a quote. Cutting off of hands is very necessary for security. They must have rampant shoplifting or something, before adding that the cabinet was considering whether to do punishments in public as before. We are changed from the past, he added, saying that the Taliban would not allow television, mobile phones, would now allow television, mobile phones, and photos to video, quote, because this is the necessity of the people, and we are serious about it. So the new and improved, kinder, gentler Taliban coming your way, compliments of the United States of America's withdrawal from Afghanistan. Listen, when we come back, it's going to be a new hour, and that new hour means new topics. I'm desperately trying to get on another segment, maybe the first of this month. It could be the second of Get to Know Your Teen. And also we're going to be joined by two candidates for Aurora City Council as the ballots are about to go out. Danielle Jarinski and a fella named Dustin Zvonik talk about a big event going on today, as well as answer some questions about other things going on in Colorado's third largest city. Until that time, you're listening to George Brockler. This is The George Show. It's 710. KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.